the men to come together and enliven one another, fortify one another, develop camaraderie, and seek to shore up the sagging male vitality in this day and age. The general description of the age of Kali is given in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Manda Sumanda, Manda Manda Bhagya Upadutta. In this age of Kali, everyone is very slow about spiritual development, very lazy, very unfortunate, and above all, always disturbed. You remember the example from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary about the trickling honey. Does everyone remember all the elements to that? What happens first? The man is running through the forest because he's being pursued by a tiger. You missed this. As he's running, being pursued by the tiger, he sees hope ahead. It looks like an abandoned well, partially covered by some growth in the jungle. So he quickly gets into the abandoned well, lowering himself down into the well by two low-lying branches of a tree that are extended over the aperture, the opening to the well. As he prepares to reach the bottom of the well by letting go of the branches, he looks at the bottom and sees there's a pit of snakes down there. They're all hissing, just waiting for him to go all the way down to the bottom, where they can sink their fangs into him. What can he do? If he goes up, the tiger is waiting. If he goes down, the snakes are waiting. You would say, well, just hold on to those branches and hope something's going to happen for the good. But what's happening to the branches? Remember, two rats, one black rat and one white rat, chewing on each branch. So it's just a matter of time. If he goes out, the tiger's there. If he goes down, the snakes are there. If he remains indecisive, well, sooner or later, the rat on each branch will gnaw through the branch. What to do? Suddenly he notices that by the rats gnawing on the branches and causing the branches to shake, there's a honeycomb on one of the branches. And the shaking of the branches as they're being gnawed causes drops of honey to come out of the honeycomb. And amazingly, as luck would have it, the drops of honey go right onto the tongue of our hero. And then what happens? He just becomes absorbed in the sensations of the honey. Forgets all about his situation. So the tiger represents death, pursuing us, ready to pounce on us when we don't know, but it will pounce. And the snakes at the bottom of the well represent problems. Oh, not one snake down there, but two, three, four, five. Because generally we don't get hit by one problem, but we get hit by a series of problems. Or we see one problem and we think we solve it, and then we realize there are other problems are binding on that so-called one problem. And what does the white rat and the black rat represent? Yes, the white rat represents death. And the two branches, punya and papa, good karma and bad karma. So men today, they're very enfeebled and very weak because of that trickling honey. Remember in the movie, Vrindavan Land of Krishna, you saw the camels chewing the thorns? Camels, like he was having a good time, just chewing. Chewing on a thorn tree? What does a camel taste when he's chewing on thorns? Mixed with what? With the taste of thorns. He relishes this, but he never thinks. He's sapping his own energies. He's tasting his own blood. He doesn't think that. You would never think of making an incision in your skin and up that string. Nice stream of blood comes out and then... But the camel is doing that. So the Bhagavatam gives us as an example. of the male sense gratifier. He doesn't understand that through his sensual indulgence, he's weakening his own body. And the so-called pleasure is at the expense of his vitality, his intelligence. Basically, through that sensual indulgence, the man is tasting his own decline, his own degeneration. That's what the taste is of. But the man is so bewildered, he thinks, oh, so as Prabhupada writes in that purport in the second canto of Shrimad, there's not much more to be said about this particular rasa or taste. We also, in preceding days, talked about the Maitunya Agar, the prison without bars. The conditioned soul in this world imprisons himself and refuses to walk out of this prison, even though there are no bars, because there are no bars to material. The conditioned soul shackles himself and won't escape, even though there are no bars. He can walk out any time, but no, he chains himself because of the sensual desire. The sensual desires make the man think, I don't mind loitering in the material world. I don't mind lingering in the material world as long as I get that taste of the trickling honey, which of course is weakening his lifespan, weakening his intelligence, making him feeble. And as we've discussed in preceding years at our men's retreat, because men are weak in this way, they can't command respect from the women. The men read in the Bhagavatam and how the men are supposed to be the leaders of the family, of society. Why isn't that the case? Because they're so enfeebled, so weak. And therefore, the man cannot assume a genuine leadership position, a spiritual leadership position. Remember the words of Muchukunda, Kunda Das, you know those words. During the day, what did he present as a situation?
Yoruba.
Yes, all the subordinate kings would come to his court, where he was seated on his throne, and bow down their helmets at his feet. But then at night, what did he say he had to do? Get on his hands and knees and beg his ladies' quarters, beg for sense gratification. So in this way, a man cannot command respect. And so, it's natural the ladies are going to think, well, if this is the way it is, then the ladies might as well assert themselves more, because the men are so weak. Many of you, most of you men don't see during class. You're facing me if it's a mixed class, and we're speaking about male leadership and male strengths. You don't see it, but the ladies start snickering. You can't see it because you're facing me. Well, I see it because I'm looking right at them. They know. They know what goes on. He's talking big now, but we know what happens. It's embarrassing for me to see that. Very embarrassing. So we've always brought out this point. So much of the world's problems are because the men are weak. A man cannot control it. Makes himself weak physically, intellectually, because he's dependent, yearning for some imaginary kind of peak physical stimulation. It's in his mind. He's read about it. He's seen it in movies. He's surfed the internet to various atrocious websites. And so he thinks that's what's going on. That's reality. And so then he pursues that dream. And in that way, he becomes victimized. He gives up his power. Just, can you see the contradiction? One minute, the man is speaking commandingly and authoritatively. The next minute, he's just grasping at flesh, totally subordinating himself, totally surrendering in a carnal blaze of fire. So it doesn't add up. The ladies understand. They can add 1 + 1 = the guy is dependent. He's weak. So we have these men's retreats to remind the men of their responsibility to themselves and to others. An irresponsible man is a great detriment to society. A man doesn't give birth to children, so he can have the complete portfolio focusing on dealing with his issues, how to conquer the minds. Only then can the man begin to have value. Of course, this kind of culture is lost in society. From the beginning of life, it's lost due to artificial stimulation of the senses as teenagers. By the time men reach their 20s, they're very weak physically. The atmosphere is so full of agitation that to cope with that saturated atmosphere of agitation, especially during one's teenage years, one resorts to artificial stimulation. In fact, psychologists encourage that. And this way, by the time men get into their 20s, their health is atrocious. As we explained a few days ago, the reality that sensual indulgence reduces your vitality is accepted in all systems of medicine in the world except Western. It's there in the Ayurveda. It's there in Chinese medicine. It's there in various Aboriginal cultures, but not in Western pharmaceutical medicine. It's the opposite. One of my godbrothers recently, he's in his very early 60s, and he had an operation for prostate cancer. So the doctor very happily told him, we've tested and the operation has been successful. Cancer is gone. Tomorrow, he said. So the doctor said, we're very happy. It's been a successful operation. You'll require a few things in your post-operation existence. Don't worry about it at all. We've got you covered. I'll write out a prescription for Viagra, and you'll be as good as gold. So, tomorrow he said, I don't think I'll be needing that prescription. I have 3 or 4 children already. I've kind of retired from procreative activity. The doctor kind of looked at him. God, you're only 60. You quit now. The doctor was like, kind of oddball do we have here? Here I am offering him the elixir, the Amrita, the Viagra. He's turning it down. The doctor asked, are you sure? I mean, do you really understand that due to the operation, your lustful, your libidinous propensities have been curtailed, but with a little, you know, pharmaceuticals, you know, pharmaceuticals, you'll be, you know, you'll be good to go. I'm out of that game. So the doctor just, each to his own. Ooh, strange world. I was on a plane coming from Delhi to Bangkok, and I was seated next to an architect who had just a chief architect for the Delhi subway system. He was an American guy, late 40s. So he started talking to me, and I divorced. I went through a divorce a few years ago. Now I'm on my second. I've been married a year. The statistics, at least in the USA, more than just over 50% of all marriages, first marriages end. And for the second marriage, you know, the statistics are 2/3 of all second. So I said to him, come on, you know, we married once, you just got married again. It's only been a year, you're already talking about it, it's just not gonna work. Yeah, fire isn't there. I said, well, what do you want to do, live in a brothel? I said, well, not exactly. I do expect some fireworks at home, you know. I said, what do you give up this dream? If you're watching too many movies, surfing the internet in places where you shouldn't have been surfing, and your head's full of all these fantasies. And then he described, you know, I call him very close family, grandmother, grandfather. One thing that really amazed me, my parents are in their 70s, and I was going by their room once, and I just, the door was open, I just happened to look in, and astonished, so happily astonished to see something that even though they're in their mid-70s, I realized they were engaged in a certain activity
We're so happy. Isn't this great? Isn't life great? Even in your mid-70s, it's still there. How wonderful. I felt so overwhelmed with just appreciation. You can see current tendencies are at odds with Vedic culture. Not much can be done about that. Our men need to strongly consider what is their mission in life and learn how to sacrifice to achieve the goal of that mission. It takes strength, it takes good association, it takes resolve. Resolve is not such an alien thing. We spoke about the resolve on a fast day, or even a codicil. You don't take grains on a codicil, it's there. Be a little inconvenient, but that's just the way it is. And what to speak of a fast day like Gaur Jayanti, where the fast goes till even midnight. Your stomach may rumble. You see little kids, devotee kids, that, you know, up. Gotta make it till 6 o'clock or midnight. And then when 6 o'clock or midnight comes, you're so glad that you executed that spiritual sacrifice. You're so glad. Sometimes during the day, on a fast day, yeah, it's a little tough. You start wondering, can I make it? It's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, my God. You start thinking, will I make it? I don't know. But it's a fast day. Then midnight comes, and you're happy. I could do it. But before midnight comes, we're on the mental platform. Start looking at your watch. 4 more hours. 3 more hours. So many of our conceptions might come from the mental platform. We imagine certain difficulties. We create false goals, and then we suffer pursuing those false goals, encountering those imaginary difficulties. A few days ago, we spoke about factory of mental concoction, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when you've abandoned all desires for sense gratification, born out of mental concoction, then you'll be into something genuine. So as men, we need to constantly consider these points. What do we want out of our life, and how are we going to get it? So there's a basic problem. It's called samskaras. Samskaras can refer to various reformatory. They also refer to mental patterns that crystallize in the mind due to behavior in the past lives and in this life. So it's the samskaras, those mental patterns that have crystallized in our mind due to living in a lust-saturated society. We've heard things. We've seen things on the internet, in movies. It's everywhere you turn. So these samskaras crystallize in our mind. We've taken these patterns. We form these patterns by sensory inputs. We've seen, we've heard, we may have unfortunately experienced. So therefore, these patterns crystallize. And that's what's plaguing you. These residues come back to haunt you. On a fast day, you remember what it was like. You've dined. You've dove for those scraps. And now you're going to totally... crystallized patterns due to illicit activity. So this is what gives the trouble. And that trouble can be transcended. Make that your quest. And selfless service. A lifestyle of selfless devotional service. Together, those two will help you to conquer over. As much as that enemy can back you up against a wall and threaten to swallow you, you have more power at your command. Krishna has given you the holy name, the Hare Krishna one. If you take shelter of that power, no fiery lust dragon. You have to know how to take advantage of that power. Those of you who read Bhagavatam, you know about the battle Dhruva Maharaj fought against the Yakshas. Remember that? It seemed like he was going to be overwhelmed. He was fighting back the Yakshas and defeating them based on ordinary military methods, strategies, weapons. And then the Yakshas deployed mystic powers to be able to conjure up all these kinds to attack him. Sometimes our struggles are like that. But you have to know how to back yourself out of a corner. The illusory energy knows how to back you into a corner, so you have to know how to back out of the corner.
tender chanting. No one can tell you, don't chant more Hare Krishna. No matter how desperate we're battling, our mind is just ablaze. Our hearts are corrupted. So don't be afraid of a knockdown, drag 'em out fight. Don't be afraid. Material existence can demand of you such excruciating ordeals. When it's for money or good grades in school or some acquisition, you just feel that's life. But why is it we become lazy when it's time to battle for our spiritual work? They both told me about it at Victoria University, Islamic department. She's so ferocious and so demanding. I heard she had Krishnanand's head just spinning like, oh, I think I heard Sachi Dilas basically had him in tears. That's what I'm like. Oh my goodness, cope with this lady and her academic demands. I remember visiting Chandidas in Manchester when he was finishing his PhD. Oh, put him through the torture chamber. He'd come flying in from here and there, and he would like be a box, like a boxer on the ropes. His father would contact me. Maharaj, Maharaj, son, get him off the ropes. Back into the ring. He'd be staggering against the ropes. Sometimes on the mat, on the canvas, and the referee's doing the count. Come on, Chanila, get up. So we've been through ordeals in material existence, but we forget about it because actually it was all for me. It was all for material gain. But why is it that for spiritual development, someday we turn up so lazy? It's amazing. How is it like chi in medical school? Was it always just a cakewalk? Yeah, sometimes. If we can sacrifice for the material energy, for material goals, why can't we sacrifice for Krishna? To regain our spiritual nature. So a main problem in Kali Yuga is just out and out laziness. It's a big problem. Laziness doesn't mean simply you don't want to work a job. Laziness means you don't want to put in the energy to conquer over the illusory energy. You don't want to do it. You can't. I mean, you know, it's spiritual. It's about spirituality, and that should just come naturally. You shouldn't have to really try for it. Effort is to be made in the material world, but spiritual life should just fall on you like the rain and leave it like that. That's why the Bhagavatam says, lazy. Not for economic development, but lazy in terms of spiritual development. And therefore, always disturbed. So when you look at men today, you find they're literally sapped of vitality. And therefore, just like we were watching the theatrics yesterday, so, and the men were, you know, what was it, the New Zealand Men's Liberation Society. They, you know, they were, had these exaggerated macho postures. It's just, you know, it's caricature. So, but that caricature, the theatrics, indicated a reality that because men don't have the spiritual strength, they have to compensate in other ways. With a hair on my chest. They have to overcompensate, as you saw in the theater, exaggerated macho behavior. Basically, we can't be gentlemen. We cannot control it. And we can only blame ourselves to birthing. So it's true, it's not always easy. There are moments when you really have to beg Krishna for added strength, but material life is full of so many kinds of struggle. Why can't we give Krishna that same? During our men's retreats, we want to put all this out on the table and deal with what makes men so ineffective. What is it about men today that causes the ladies to snicker? But we know what happened. Instead, it's so embarrassing. There are different ashrams, and they all have different approaches conserving the vitality, the spiritual and material vitality, but all have that as their goal. It's worth it every year that we, at least every year, someone who joins the army, you know that an effort's going to be the effort that's expected. It's not unrealistic. We'll be better materially and... So let's understand what's harassing us. It's those crystallized patterns in the mind. An interesting phenomenon we encounter is that we, coming to bhakti, we do have some young men who, out of great fortune, have not experienced scourge of affairs. Of course, they exclude the attempts at artificial stimulation like pornography. But they have, by good fortune, they avoided, hadn't come across the full immersion program. And I notice that sometimes their minds, just the better of them, this curiosity, oh, what could it be like? I can't deal with curiosity any longer. Crystallized patterns of curiosity, I'm just getting the better of me. Some other, I've got to lose my innocence. If I can just lose my innocence, just once. But let me explain one striking point about reality. Those crystallized patterns in the mind due to curiosity are nothing compared to the crystallized patterns that come from the full immersion. They're nothing. But it's hard to explain that to someone who's being overpowered by curiosity. They can't conceive of that. They're getting all pretty light in terms of the samskara, in terms of the crystallized patterns. They're getting all really light. So this science of how to preserve the material and spiritual vitality, the Srila Prabhupada himself said, these things need, otherwise devotees will not be able. So we don't run away from reality. So we have these men's forces of the retreat. Seek reinvigoration, recalibration, and the strength in our focus. The men's issues are a focused program. Like a laser beam of light. Whereas it could be said that the ladies' issues, they're just like a, what do you call it, a widely diffused light that just kind of covers the whole universe. Whereas the men's issues are like a laser beam of light, very intense and very narrow. So whatever ashram the man is in, he has to cope. You have to go across this bridge. Is how are you going to cross the bridge in a legitimate way? Just like if you want to get out of Nugupta Braj, it's on the other side of the bridge. It's only one way. Got it. Come across that bridge over the gorge. Some years ago, ne'er-do-wells cruising around on the other side of the bridge, apparently looking for some houses to build. And so neighbors called the police. Very simple for the police to deal with it. There's only one way out of there. So they just blocked the bridge with their police car. Marauders, the Yahoos, approached the Sistine Bridge and saw on the other side of the police car his lights flashing, blocking the bridge, and hangs up. So we also have one way forward. You can put off dealing with this issue at your own detriment. It'll always be the monkey riding on the back. This is life as it is. In other words, it's an honorable career in of itself to deal with these issues. It's what the human form of life is meant for. Another problem men have is distraction. Rather than focus on these issues, they get caught up in so many things, so many kinds of entertainment, television, sports, video games, on. It plays out the mind, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Intelligence of the irresolute is many-branched, bahushaka, and therefore there can't be that focused determination. Those who are on this bhakti path, they are determined, their aim is one, but those who are attached to indulgence, material indulgence. So society today does a wonderful job of distracting men, and therefore a man can't
grasped that his topmost career is to deal with these issues. It does take work. It does take time. It does take energy. But what else is the uniform of life meant for? Sometimes I hear devotees saying, yeah, I know, you gotta cross this bridge. It's a lot of work. But this world is full of work. What's wrong with working for the highest purpose? To become free, and then you can help others to become free. Having for tomorrow the 2nd, next day the 3rd, the morning of the classes in the morning, during the days, build relationships, camaraderie. We've explained this, especially last year, how men have this tendency sometimes to be islands. Ladies are always networking amongst them. Sometimes men can just draw and look, I've got my problem. So this men's portion is for developing some genuine camaraderie in Brahmacharya Ashram itself. Good strides forward in that. But I hear bubbling amongst the men grihasthas some kind of resonance, mutual resonance is not simply, well, you got your problems, I got mine, you're drowning, well, that's the way it is. All right. Any questions or comments from our senior devotees? You have a question?
Should we avoid doing sports or being part in a sport club?
When I was talking about sports, I was talking about the male obsession with sports, you know, in terms of constantly being absorbed in, what sports teams are doing. And it's the contemporary version of the Roman gladiators in the Colosseum, you know. It's meant to distract the people. All this emphasis on sports, professional sports, is meant to distract people. A prime minister of New Zealand told me that personally. That's one of the, that's the main reason for so many TV channels, so much sports, people from worrying about what the government's doing. Yeah. What do the people know anyway? Why should they worry about what the government's doing? They can't understand it anyway. So we'll just end the pretense by giving them so much TV and sports. So that's what I was referring to. Football fanatic or rugby fanatic. I'm not saying that our bhakti yoga might have some exercise or some aerobics or some other bit. But a lot of these sports, they tax the body and you get hurt. You pull a muscle, you strain yourself. Telling me he was the local rugby hero. One of the local. He was telling me after the match, the local match, pub, and if you're one of the stars on the team, all the other mates are looking up to you in the pub, they're all focusing on you. The idea is that you think when you're in the center of that focus is, since all the guys are focusing on me, praising me, the girls must be looking too. Because the girls, they'll look at all the guys looking at me and realize I'm a big deal, so the girls will start looking. And he hurt his shoulder or something and realized maybe I should just chant Hare Krishna. So we are not against exercise and sometimes some kind of rudimentary sports, just for Shukadev's birthday. Remember, where's Shukadev? Yeah, what happened? What did they do? What do you call it? Paintball. Yeah, in honor of Shukadev's birthday, the householders all went to a paintball place. Everyone knows what a paintball is. Oh, it was Bhumna Krishna. You got all sorts of welts. Was it you that got all these welts on?
Yeah, I gave a few good welts as well.
So, I'm speaking about sports obsessions. Bhakti yoga practitioners aren't such that if, New Zealand rugby team loses, they go into depression. The rest of the country have to observe the rugby obsession. You've been here for?
I've been here enough to observe. My brother, when I saw about the All Blacks, I had to learn rugby, and I'm like,
yes.
Sometimes,
depends on what the purpose of the relationship is. Everything has a purpose. So what would the purpose of such a relationship be?
You put it in the specifics, but I guess any kind of...
What's the purpose of the marriage?
Children.
What's the purpose of having children?
That's just standard procreation.
Huh?
That's just...
Wait, what's the purpose of standard procreation?
To fulfill physical...
And what's the purpose of the physical desire?
We could talk about just going on with chemical, but it's purely being material. But not everyone's going to be...
Right.
So So I guess the main thing I'm wondering about is that emotional attachment, a relationship. You don't want to be too attached. You don't want to be cold to them.
Why are they around you?
Well, just the attraction, the associates. It could be others.
A little lost now.
Basically, I'm wondering, you don't want to be too attached.
To people in general?
Yeah. Or the most extreme people.
You should be attached to the association of devotees. You can be attached to that. We can't cut ourselves off from personal relationships. So the bhakti system will teach you how to thrive in genuine personal relationships, whether it's a marriage or it's male camaraderie.
Well, it's real, maybe.
The bhakti practice is all about emotional states and loving exchanges. So it's not that we leave those things behind. In other words, it's not that those things are part of material existence, but when you come to bhakti, well, you just go into this void, and you become cold and sterile. No, the real arena of emotional existence is in bhakti. The real arena of loving exchanges is bhakti. But we don't see it at first because we're so attached to the illusory arena of emotional exchange. So I think we'll lose that personal resonance if we back off from that material arena, because we're not sure yet what's in the spiritual arena. That may, now, if you have particular questions about emotional resonance in a genuine marriage situation, we have seen, especially like Yadavar Guru, who's been in a bhakti relation almost 4 years. You can ask him. We have others, lesser years experience. Gopal Guru, how many? Six. Vinishari, how many? 17 together, but then in the when you came to your bhakti practice, how many years is it? 15 years. So you can ask, and I'll give you first-hand experience. What?
For a moment, without your partner, your bhakti with them.
Well, I can answer that. Yes. Service is magnified. He's a very saintly person. Yadubar, who also senior most crystallized patterns in the mind. It's something you have to learn to tolerate. It's the price you pay for living birth after birth in the material world. You pick up these residues. You can't just beat up on yourself about it. You know, you just got to deal with it. It's like when you're walking from here to Waihunga, and you know, the clouds start showering. And what can you do? You get a little wet, you live with it. It's not the end of the world. So you've got to just understand how material nature works and the price you've paid for birth after birth in the material world, and take up the necessary means to rectify the situation. How do you get an invaded culture? How do you get rid of an unwanted guest? Right. So gradually, those crystallized patterns become weaker and weaker. And also, while they're becoming weaker and weaker, you, due to your diligence in the bhakti process, become more expert and more expert in counteracting those crystallized patterns. Meaning, you become more and more expert at taking shelter of the Hare Krishna mantra, taking shelter of selfless devotion.
So, at what stage can we, or how does a gentleman act?
Sometimes when Srila Prabhupada was asked to define how a gentleman acts, he replied, he sees all other women except his wife as mother. He sees others' property as garbage in the street. What's the other one?
He treats others as he would like to be treated.
He treats others as he would want to be treated. Hallmark of a gentleman. So these are, I know, serious points. Sometimes they're embarrassing points. We've weakened ourselves, either in the past, or hopefully we're seeking to avoid weakening ourselves in the future. So at some point, we've got to understand what the game is all about and take up the work to reclaim our genuine spiritual manhood. It's work. It's a career. This is my point. I It's a genuine career in of itself to deal with these issues. It's just that current society does not recognize a quest as a career. But in a real human culture, to take up the challenge to control your mind and sense of the topmost career, got lost somewhere. You just say it straight. What are the factors in that decision?
What's the question?
In relation to someone you're already with or possibly could be with?
Possibly.
Yes, that's a good question. We'll be discussing that. Different stances you can take up, all for the same purpose of conquering over mind. I've explained before, in martial arts, you know anything about martial arts? Stance is very important in martial arts. If your stance is not proper, an expert martial artist can walk up to you and with one finger knock you over, just because your feet are not properly positioned. So stance is very important in development of our revival of our spiritual nature. The different ashramas, brahmacharya, grihastha, so forth, they are different stances, all for achieving the same goal. So it's very important to have a good stance. For some, the best stance is the saffron stance. For others, the best stance is legitimate spiritual family life. But all the stances have the same purpose. Everyone would agree, simply, that some stances are cheaper and some are more expensive, but all the stances have the same conquer over mind, become attached to Krishna. This is the universalism, genuine spiritual lifestyle. We have upstanding brahmacharis here. You can ask them what it's like. We have upstanding grihasthas, householders here. You can ask them what it's like. We're fortunate to have Yadavar Prabhu. You can ask him what are the realities of married life. He has even a grandchild. We have saffron wearers like Vijay Prabhu. How many years?
32.
32 years. You can ask him what it's like. What are the realities? So take it. That's why we're having this gathering. So you can plunder all this experience. Take advantage of it. So it's good you're thinking about these things. I'm very happy to hear. As most of you know, in Wellington it's been operating for a decade now, our contemporary Vedic ashram, the Paramahansa ashram, and it's proved to be a great place for young men to figure out who they are, what kind of stance they want to take up. It's partially supervised, the program there. Otherwise, the men can work or go to school. A lot of them have to put in time to just fix their health from all the atrocities they put themselves through as a teenager. The things that are common these days, drugs, overdosing and sensuality. By the time they become 20, they're devastated. It takes a concerted effort to get their health back together. And because the fabric of society is disintegrating, material society is disintegrating, there's so many problems of abuse and complaint. So this contemporary Vedic ashram, the Paramahansa ashram, has done a great job in just giving men an intermediate situation where they can see the way forward. So from that ashram, we've had brahmacharis, vyastas, even you get some who just don't know yet and they go on as bachelors. And we're trying to deal with reality. But what is the purpose of the occupation? I mean, job, business, what's the purpose? What's the purpose of the family? All right, so then, we always have to identify, what is the purpose? Remember, you go to work or go to your business in order to give, not to get. To give a bhakti lifestyle to yourself, to your family, and as wider part of the world as your resources allow. That's the purpose, and going to work, going to business, to give. So that purpose is noble. Yes.
How can you definitely know whether
player? That's why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says bhakti requires guidance. Exactly. How do you know? That's why Krishna says tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasina seva. If you want to know the truth about sacrificing for Krishna, you accept a guru That means someone who just says what Krishna says and can guide you in how to make a progressive lifestyle, spiritual advancement. Otherwise, on your own, you can easily be. You're not a pure enough mind in the beginning stage, generally, to so many other voices speak about a good party. But so much that, once again, some scars, those crystallized patterns in the consciousness, they're there like the gorse. You can ask Gopal Guru and Dayadeva and Buddha and Krishna what it takes to get a divorce. So it's work, and we've got to go at our impurities with that same kind of determination. If Dayadeva is out there, you can see him visor on, and he's got his chainsaw, and he's just suited up from head to foot, and he's literally attacking the gorse, seeking to eradicate it at the root. Why can't we do that for our own life? But there's some concept in our mind, I keep getting back to this point, there's some concept in our mind that for ourselves, we don't have to endeavor that intensely. But Krishna's already given you the answers. He's explained himself to you in Bhagavad Gita. First you accept what he's already told you, and then in the advanced stages of Bhagavad Gita, he'll give you very customized instructions, but that's at the higher level. Tesham sata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvatam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam priyantite. Krishna says, for those who are constantly serving him with priti, with affection, he starts talking to you. There has to be qualification. You're still studying music at the university? Yes? All right. So, suppose some little kid comes to the university music class with a, you know, plastic guitar. I'm ready to play. who will take it seriously? The teacher will say, very nice, your enthusiasm, but please take some time to become qualified. Grow up a bit. The simile, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, you want to hear me talk? Become qualified. But actually, Krishna's already spoken everything you need to know in Bhagavad Gita. But in the more advanced stages of bhakti, he'll give you further inspiration when you become qualified. Okay? Yes. This will be the last question. It's a very good one, right?
Attaining the qualification, there is a possibility that we start expecting from Krishna the meaning of the self.